Hi, everybody. I'm Sammy Griffin. I am an alcoholic.
Hi.
My sobriety date is September 1st, 1989, and it's through people like you and a sponsor who loved me enough until I could learn to love you and God of my understanding. And I have a home group. It's the Keystone Group, and it's probably ending right now unless we have a long-winded speaker. And so I'm really grateful to be here. I want to thank Lynn for asking me to do this. I did this quick history at a retreat, and so I guess she let Sam know, and so Sam called and asked if I would do it. So I'd be honored to do it. I will tell you a little history about myself. I got sober, and actually at the end of August, I used September 1st because I don't remember too much about the end of August. You know, in fact, I don't really remember the 1980s, and that is the truth. That's like blurry. But when I got sober, I literally didn't have too many brain cells left. You know, I had two brain cells left, and they were waving goodbye to each other. And so when I came to treatment, and they told me I had to get a sponsor. I didn't even know what a sponsor was, and I really was too stupid to not, you know, I thought that if I didn't get a sponsor and do what you said, I couldn't join this organization. I mean, I really didn't know any different. So I got a sponsor, and it's probably the greatest gift. One of the greatest gifts that I have is my sponsor. My sponsor has literally led me through and stands by me, supports me, loves me, and through this journey that I've had. I'm going to be talking about the history of AA, but I will tell you, since I've been sober, and a lot of people know my story, that my family completely disowned me. As in the Jewish religion, what they do is they take their sleeve and they rip it, and they killed me off, so I didn't have a family. And it killed my heart. Killed me. And I used to say to my sponsor all the time, you know, she would say to me, Sammy, we love you. You're now part of our family. And I'm like, you don't understand. And I'm going to tell you today that I have the best family in Alcoholics Anonymous. I call my family that I grew up with my starter set, you know, but you are my family. I know more history about Alcoholics Anonymous and you people than I do of my starter set. So I love history. I never knew that I liked history, but I love the history of Alcoholics Anonymous because, number one, I'm so happy to be sober. I'm so grateful to be sober. I mean, I don't know where I would be. I joke about this, but I'd just be a wandering Jew. You know, I'd just be traveling the world somewhere, you know, just literally just living off other people, and that's what I was doing. So in the big book, when he came to the part of, in the forewords, when it starts talking about the history and how this all started. And what I do with my sponsees is this is how I explain it, because I think it's really important to know where we came from. I think about this. Think about these yuppie guys. There was three yuppie guys and a girl. During 1910, there was a place called Manchester, Vermont, that was really a very exclusive, a wealthy place. This is where the wealthy had their summer homes. And these group of guys, these little yuppie little kids, you know, grew up there. They would go there in the summer. And the cast of characters is what started. Out of those three guys, all of them were alcoholic. And, well, of course, we had Lois, who was an Al-Anon, and you got to have an Al-Anon, and then the Al-Anon had to marry, Lois had to marry Bill because we have to have Al-Anon, and that's the only way you could get an Al-Anon if you marry somebody in Al-Anon or related. So we had this, so 1910, it was exclusive there, and we have the first one I'm going to talk about is Bill Wilson. Bill Wilson was only there in Manchester because that's where he went to school. He was went to a school called Burn Burton. And so that's the first guy. The second guy that I want to talk about is Abby Thatcher. And Abby Thatcher's family came from Albany, New York. very wealthy family. And then the third one is Roland Hazard. And Roland Hazard's family came from Rhode Island. And they were multimillionaires of the time. So we have all the characters. And it's just amazing how just those three drunks. The first one, it was Roland Hazard. And Roland Hazard's family wanted to groom him to take over the family. And so what they did is, but he had a little problem, And so they sent him everywhere in the United States to get help, but they couldn't get help. So they sent him, this was like 1931, they sent him over to Carl Jung, the psychiatrist in Switzerland. So he goes over there. And, you know, because they had all the money to do this, they send him over, and he spends one whole year, you know, for Dr. Jung to try to get some kind of personality change in him. He was a psychiatrist, but now you got to remember, back then, they did not preach or talk about spirituality back then. But Dr. Jung was very spiritual. All right, so he's like, that year is up, he goes. The same day he leaves to come back to the States, he gets drunk. You know, someone asked him a question when he was in Paris. Asked him one question, would you like a drink? And he says, yes, I would. And so he drank. So he goes back because he's in really bad shape. I mean, his parents couldn't do anything with him. So he goes back to Dr. Jung and says, Dr. Jung, is there anything you can do? And he goes, no, you're hopeless and I can't help you. And it's very interesting that he said no and that you're hopeless, because that tells us in how it works, like no human power can relieve us. No one can try to rearrange anything in us like that. So it was a great message for us, and we didn't even know it at the time. But he does say, listen, people of your type, hopeless, can get help somehow, somewhere, if they just do some kind of conversion, have some kind of transformation. So he sent them to New York. And in New York, this is where we have, and I don't know if y'all know any of the history, but there was a reverend called Sam Shoemaker. And Sam Shoemaker was the Episcopal clergyman that was at the Calvary Church where Roland ended up, and that was the soup kitchen. And it was very low bottom drunks that was going on there. So he gets sober. He has the conversion, you know. And so the next person, so Roland's sober doing the Oxford group. And let me tell you about the Oxford group just for a second. The Oxford group was a group of men led by Shoemaker, but also introduced by Frank Buchman, this guy named Frank Buchman. But what happened was they decided that they wanted to do away with the church, that they would just come together and live together by spiritual principles, because it's very important, because that's where we get our first six steps from, is from the Oxford group. And it's a very spiritual-centered, principle-centered set of principles. So Ebbie Thatcher is the second character. Ebbie is from his family. His family was so embarrassed by Ebbie because his father was once going to run for vice president. I mean, they were very political people, but they were so embarrassed about Ebbie that they gave him the house in Manchester and said, don't ever come back. You can have the house. In fact, we'll even give you money. I'll give you money to stay there. So now Ebbie Thatcher's in Manchester, but the problem of it is he can't stay sober, and he's causing a lot of problems. I mean, a lot of problems. Example. He was, you know how we all, when we're drunk and we all think of this project we're going to do? Well, he comes up with this project that he wants to paint this mansion. So he gets the ladders and he gets the paint and he gets all that stuff. And he starts painting his house, and he probably gets that door done, and he gets thirsty. And so he gets out a chair, and he starts sitting down and admiring his work and how we are, because we love what we do. But a bird came along and shat on the paint job. So what he did is he went into the house and he got a couple of rifles. And he started shooting up all the birds. Well, he gets arrested. So Roland, so while he's there, he gets one phone call. And he's going to call his buddy Roland. Because, you know, Roland's got a lot of clout in that neighborhood. I mean, they're, you know, big people. So he calls Roland, and Roland comes with another guy named Zebra G. It's important that Zebra was along, because in front of the judge's name was Judge Graves, and that was the last name of Zebra. So Roland and Zebra go in front of the judge, you know, which is his dad, and says, just turn them over to us. We're going to take care of them, because we'll just take them with us, because Roland and Zebra were sober through the Oxford Group. So they take Ebby to New York, to the Oxford Group, and that's how Ebby gets sober. Okay, he doesn't stay sober, but he gets sober. And so during this time, Ebby's thinking about his friend, Bill. You know, Bill needs some help, because he heard Bill was in really bad shape, and he was. So Ebby goes over to Bill's house, and many of you all know the story. It's, you know, he goes in there and knocks on the door, and he opens the door, and he sees Ebby, and he's bright skinned, you know, just clear. He's sober. And Bill goes, come on in. He'll have a drink with me, you know. And, you know, Ebby says, no, not going to drink, not going to have any. And Bill goes, oh, my God, what got into you? And he goes, I got religion. He goes, don't worry about it. You'll get over it, you know. He doesn't really care, because religion has never played a part in his life. So, but what Ebby tells him, which is probably the most, it's the spiritual message. He sits there and Bill goes, I'm not going to do it. God's not for me. He goes, I'm going to tell you, Bill, you can choose your own conception of God. Right then, Bill could not argue. He couldn't even come back with a statement. So Bill doesn't really get doesn't stay sober. He gets drunk again. He ends up in the hospital. And Ebby visits him, you know, every time he was in the hospital. And one night, Bill has that spiritual light that came to him. And he screamed out, if there is a God, you know, why am I not there? What is it? And so he has that spiritual awakening. He rolls off the bed, you know, and Bill gets sober. Bill tries very, very hard to help everybody around him. The doctors allowed him, Dr. Silkworth allowed him to go and try to, you know, help others. And they even questioned it. But Bill did, and he didn't have too many successes. And so one of the greatest things that was said to Bill, because Bill was quite depressed about it, you know, like no one is staying sober. And Lois, his wife, said, but you are. But you are. So the message is, you know, we help others regardless if they get sober or not. You will stay sober. So that's how that happened, you know, with the history of all of them. But what happens with Bill is Bill's got a couple of months sober, and he goes to Akron, Ohio. And in Akron, Ohio, Bill is doing a business deal that falls through. It's, you know, the stories in the book. It falls through. And he is actually thinking about drinking. He lying to himself and says, I think I'll just go have some ginger ale. And it was in a bar. And what he did, instead of going in there, the marquees, do y'all remember marquees? And, you know, when at hotel rooms years and years ago, they would have a list of all the churches that you could go to, all the denominations. Well, that's what was there. And Bill went through every single one of them and called them up, and, you know, and people just says, no, I can't help you, or no one answered. But the last one was Dr. Tunkst. He was a reverend. And Dr. Tunkst knew exactly who to get in touch with. And it was, so actually he got in touch with another person before, Henrietta Seiberling. And I love this story. It just gives me chills. Henrietta Seiberling was a member of the Oxford Group, just like Anne and Bob were. They were all, but the difference between that Oxford Group and New York is this one was high society. It was, you know, only the high society. In New York, it was low-bottom drunks, you know. Dr. Bob had tried many times to get sober through the Oxford Group and could not get sober. So it was May. It was May of 1935. By the way, Bill Wilson's anniversary date is December 11th of 1934. Dr. Bob, this was, he was in 1935. It was Mother's Day. And so he called her, he got the number from Dr. Tunks for Henrietta Seiberling. So they were in the Oxford Group. And the Oxford Group of that day believed if they prayed for somebody for a whole month, they could help that person out. And that month, it happened to be Dr. Bob. So when he calls Henrietta Seiberling, and she had so much faith, she believed so much that when he called and said, "I'm a rummy from New York, and I'm looking for a drunk," she said, "I've been waiting for your call," because she knew that God was going to send someone. I mean, it's something. So they meet over, not on Mother's Day. It's a joke. What happened? Dr. Bob was so drunk that he had bought a potted plant for his wife for Mother's Day, but he couldn't go meet Bill that day because he was more potted than the plant. So they met the next day, and Dr. Bob didn't want to go. You know, he goes, "What is this guy going to know? You know, I'm a doctor. You know, this guy is a New York whatever. You know, I'm not going to go, all right. I'll go meet him for 15. I'm going to give the guy 15 minutes. So they meet over at Henrietta Seiberling's cottage house, which is on the estate of the Seiberling estate. In fact, that's where I got this necklace. Just throw that in there. I got it at the Seiberling estate. So that's interesting. So they meet, and what is one of the most important things that Sam Shoemaker told Bill to do, stop lecturing people. Just tell them your story. Don't tell people what to do. Just tell them what you've done. So Bill went there and sat with Dr. Bob, and they talked for 5 hours. You know, Bill told him, "I'm here for me. I'm here for me. You know, I want to stay sober." And they became so strong. That is how Alcoholics Anonymous started. And, of course, they got the third person, which is Bill Doxson, at the hospital. And he was a really low-bottom drunk. It was a lawyer. And at that time, that's the only people who really got help, is people that were who could afford to go into the hospital, because it was $1.50 to go into the hospital to be treated, and no one could really afford that. And what they used to do for people like us, who, you know, we have treatment centers, we have, you know, we open up our homes and everything. Back then, they were treated by putting in an insane asylum, and they did electric shock therapy. I mean, we're very fortunate today. Very fortunate. There's something, the only thing I wanted to read on here was, which I love, and it says, it's my phone, and this is so true, and this is how, I don't know how your story is, but this is how mine linked. Bill gained knowledge of the nature of alcoholism from Dr. Silkworth. Dr. Silkworth told him, "Though certainly foolish and selfish," isn't that a nice way to put us? "You are sick, bodily and mentally." Selfish and foolish. My friends had other words for it, you know. "But I was selfish and foolish. We're unlovely creatures in the cups of alcoholism." And that's what, when Dr. Bob gave him that, that's what he gave Dr. Bob. He told them the grave nature of alcoholism, because Dr. Bob came in the same way. I did not know I was an alcoholic. And when they told me that I was an alcoholic, I was real happy because it wasn't my fault. But, you know, that's the only thing I got out of it. But it's amazing that I didn't know that once I put something in me and that I had no control whatsoever, that something happened. The allergy took place, that phenomenon of craving. And then when I'm bone dry, when I don't even have alcohol in me, how come my mental state says that I can still do it? So it says, so Bill gained knowledge of the nature of alcoholism from Dr. Silkworth. He represented the solution to his problem by his friend. He was introduced to it by Ebby Thatcher. Ebby brought the spiritual solution, and Dr. Bob gave him the physical. And it's so important to realize in my story today, combine these two components with the practice of carrying the solution to others. So when I got sober and, you know, I was still in the me, 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 everything was me, me, me. It took me a long time to get the me to the I, to the thy will be done. But once I started realizing, you know, the nature of my disease, it took me a little while, and the Big Book puts it such a great way. I had to learn to concede to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic. I did not know. I had to learn that. But by God's grace, He gave me the ability to stay. You know, just stay. I don't even know why I was staying. I don't even know why I wasn't going. I don't know any of those. I can't answer anything. I just know through God's grace, I stayed. I stayed sober. You know, and I used to think that I knew the answers to everything, and I know nothing today. I don't know why some people get it and some people don't. I just don't. I know the first 100 people that they talked about in the Big Book all got drunk. They all got drunk. You know, and I mean, some came back, of course, but most of them got drunk and didn't come back. And in my life, in my sobriety life, I have worked with so many alcoholics. People say to me, oh, my gosh, Sammy, you have so many sponsees and they're sober. I said, yeah, but you don't see the ones that go through me. People come and go. This is not for people who want it. It's for people who really need it. My butt had to be on fire. I don't know. It was the last house on the block for me. I mean, I don't know what else would have gotten me here. The reason I'm grateful today is because I have a life. God has given me a life. That the most important reason is I have a God. I didn't have one before. You know, back when this AA started in the Oxford group, and they were still in the Oxford group, we split from them. But when we first started so-called AA, they did the third step first. You had to have God or the willingness to believe before they would even invite you to a meeting. So things have changed. I mean, definitely things have changed. But I'm going to end with this, because that's all I really came here for, was just to give a brief story of the history. There's a story in the back of the book, and it has this line in it, and I just love it. And the line says, if I put AA first, AA and God, everything second will become first class. Thanks.